Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Vella Jones and the Children's Committee wrote Dear Congress, Voices of American Children Being Abused by Conversion Therapy, to educate America about the practice of conversion therapy. Conversion therapy attempts to change an individual's sexual orientation from homosexual or bisexual to heterosexual using spiritual, religious, and various psychological interventions. These treatment modalities are based upon the assumption that homosexuality, per se, is a mental disorder. All the nation's leading professional medical and mental health associations have rejected conversion therapy as ineffective, dangerous, and unnecessary. Vella Jones joins 411 Teen. Vella, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much.
Oh, look forward to you educating us. What was the impetus for you and the Children's Committee writing this book? I mean, what were you trying to accomplish?
Well, education is power, mm-hmm. and the main mission of the book is to educate people on real-life experiences with conversion therapy and hopefully drive empathy and understanding in those who may not truly understand what it is or what people go through. At the end of the day, the laws need to change, and we need to be here to protect the youth of America. And, hopefully, after reading the book, people are empowered to act and write their elected officials to advocate for change.
Well, I read the book, and it was powerful. That's all I can say. It was very, very powerful. How prevalent is conversion therapy?
I think that there's a misunderstanding that it's far and few between, mm-hmm. but the reality is conversion therapy happens in probably every town in America. It is there, it is in our streets, it is in our communities, it is affecting hundreds and thousands of juveniles, if not more, every single year, and it seems to be picking up a little bit of strength. But the other intent of the book was for people to understand that it's not something that's far away. It happens next door, it happens down the street, and it happens in your town.
Yeah, there's a lot of information just recently coming out about conversion therapy. I know I hadn't heard a lot about it. I knew what it was. But it does seem to be everywhere. Are you familiar with the new movie that's out, Boy Erased?
Yes, it's a very, very powerful film, and I feel like it accurately represents the issues, and it's a powerful insight into what really happens and what we experience.
Vella, can you speak firsthand to the immediate and long-term effects of conversion therapy? Share your experiences to the point that you are comfortable.
Unfortunately, I can. Conversion yeah. therapy has been a lifelong battle for me. It started when I was very young. It probably got really intense starting somewhere around fourth grade. It's been a long battle. The effects of conversion therapy and being exposed to it, especially as a juvenile, never really go away. It's something that you have to deal with and face every single day throughout your childhood and throughout your adulthood. The effects are intense, to say the least. When we interfere with the youth's development, especially at those critical time periods in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, you're permanently altering the physical and psychological development of an individual. And the way that they're interconnected as well, and the way that they affect each other. Being able to develop healthy relationships and make strong connections when you are asked to disconnect from your natural self and disconnect from other people and bonding with other people as a child, you know, it's something that you have to relearn and reteach yourself and re-empower yourself. You know, so it's a long battle, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Obviously, associating shame with your natural feelings is a strong technique that conversion therapists use. So, you know, having a sense of self-worth is a battle that people who go through conversion therapy face very strongly. Obviously, when you're exposed to such traumatic intervention in young age, there's an element of shock that you have to learn how to deal with and overcome throughout your life. You know, coping mechanisms, a lot of times, you know, dealing with addiction or feelings of suicide and worthlessness are prevalent long after exposure to conversion therapy. So it's about learning how to be a healthy individual after somebody or someone or some group has interfered to try and make you not healthy. And that's, there's a lot that goes into that.
Mm-hmm. How, you know? Can you just share some of your insights as to how you coped, how it went for you?
Well, that's a good question. When I was young, I decided that the way I was going to get through this was I was going to be empowered to be unaffected by the negative and only affected by the positive and productive. So what I basically ended up doing was trying to block out, the hate, as I refer to it. It ended up in me repressing a lot of memories and detaching from people and things around me for a very, very long time. On the other end of the spectrum, it allowed me to embrace, some of the beauty of life, because that's what I wanted to see at the time. I didn't want to see the ugly, and I wanted to see the beautiful. So I think it was effective to make sure that I didn't go down a path of total destruction. And that was the best thing I could decide mm-hmm. to do at the time to survive. And it really is a matter of survival. I think when we are thrown into a state of needing to survive, everybody does it in their own way. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's the path that I took. But it did involve me repressing a lot of feelings and emotions and thoughts and memories, which, you know, of course, caught up with me. But it got me through the moment.
For the listening audience, what is conversion therapy?
Well, you know, conversion therapy is the attempt to use physical and psychological techniques to change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. It is an attempt to redirect an individual's thought processes and natural physical biological instincts in a direction that is more quote-unquote suited for society. That technically is the mm-hmm. best way that I can describe it.
When we examine conversion therapy, there are a number of different interventions that are utilized. I'm thinking mm-hmm. of, and the listening audience may think this is extreme, but I'm thinking of things like castration, mm-hmm. institutionalization, aversion mm-hmm. therapy. Did you experience any of these types of techniques? And would you distinguish or at least describe what they involve for the listening audience?
Yeah, I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Would you describe any of the techniques that were used with you, whether it was aversion therapy, institutionalization, I should say attempting to make you think in a different way? And I just wanted to know if you were exposed to any of those and just share with the audience what that involved, what it was like.
I mean, there are many different paths that people take when it comes to implementing conversion therapy. Institutionalization is one of them. My book focuses on the experiences of conversion therapy in the home.
Mm-hmm.
I was never actually sent away. You know, the practices took place in my home and in my hometown, which is part of the intent of the book for people to understand that it's not always about being sent away, that in a way it can become almost a family or community effort, which is very, very scary to think about.
Yeah, I would think so, because you're living it 24/7.
Correct. So some of the things that, you know, I specifically went through was repeated exposure to hypnosis as a young child, all the way from fourth to eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
There was some instances of actually being drugged to induce, you know, hypnosis and things like that. Repeated exposure to behavioral redirection, you know, and consequences that come along with not adhering to physically presenting yourself one way, verbally presenting yourself one way, things like that. Isolation was a very large technique that was an influence in my life. Being isolated from just normal everyday childhood activities, being allowed to make normal friends and interact with individuals in my peer groups, not being allowed to watch TV, not being allowed to listen to music, not being allowed to read certain books, not being allowed to, you know, read magazines and things like that. So just being isolated from mainstream society in an effort to control my thought processes, my behavior, my understanding of the world, and also to stunt my creativity and to stunt my own empowerment.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I am talking with Bella Jones. The conversation will continue after a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and on the phone I have Bella Jones. Bella is the author of Dear Congress, Voices of American Children Currently Being Abused by Conversion Therapy. Bella, some people question whether homosexuality is it's an acceptable alternative lifestyle or an orientation. Now, personally, I have a problem with this position because lifestyle implies a choice. But I'd like to have you respond to that. How do you feel about that characterization?
Well, I think that that kind of wording is typically used to induce doubt in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're absolutely right. Lifestyle implies that there is some kind of choice or preference, and that is not the case whatsoever. I think wording like that is a good way to politically attempt to persuade people or confuse people.
Okay. Who buys into conversion therapy? I mean, is it the religious right, the uneducated? I mean, who buys into these techniques?
Well, I mean, obviously the religious institutions are a big driving force behind conversion therapy. There is a, you know, traditional setup of the family unit, you know, the heterosexual family unit that is perpetuated as sanctioned and acceptable, by, you know, God or, you know, our religious or the religious rules set in place. You know, but where does ignorance come from, or how does it thrive? That's the ultimate question. Mm-hmm. Conversion therapy, just like, you know, instances of racism, is an institutionalized ignorance. So we must look at the religious as well as the political side of things, because those are the two driving institutions within our American society.
Well, gay issues remain very controversial. Societal attitudes toward homosexuality vary according to culture and education. From your perspective, what role does education play in the development of attitude?
I mean, education is everything. You know, education is power and empowerment. And it can be disempowerment as well if we are inadequately educated. You know, it is the driving force behind change, and whether that be positive or negative. And that's part of the motivation behind my book, behind the book as well. But we need to be educated on what really happens and what conversion therapy really is. It is, without question, institutionalized child abuse. You know, instances of documented conversion therapy, you know, would, if it wasn't on an LGBTQ individual, be considered and punished as child abuse. You know, so we need to understand what really it is that we're supporting, you know, religiously or politically. We have to understand that the fact that we don't have laws that protect juveniles from being exposed to conversion therapy, that we are responsible for allowing child abuse to happen in America every single day. You know, so education and providing perspective and true understanding is the avenue for change.
Do you find that attitudes vary according to age and culture?
You know, I'm not really sure that I could say 100%. The ideal, you know, the idealism inside of me or the optimist inside of me wants to say people of all ages and races and religion will be open to the change that's needed to protect children from child abuse and conversion therapy. But the reality is, you know, the older we get, sometimes the harder it is to change our beliefs or our understanding of the world and how it's constructed and how it affects us and individuals. But the optimist in me wants to say the world is open to listening to protecting children. I couldn't say for sure, though, either way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the Children's Committee. You founded it, who it's composed of, what it's about.
Well, I mean, the Children's Committee is just a group who is who wants to make a difference, who is there to educate individuals, who wants to participate in educating individuals about the dangers of conversion therapy and what we can do to change the laws. Obviously, we want to do whatever we can to make sure that we're able to provide protection in general. It's a group that is driven by education and communication, connectivity, and without question, nonviolence. But the goal is to promote people to act on their desires to change and connect with elected officials and voice their need for change.
Your book, Dear Congress, where can one purchase it? We've been talking about it, and I realize we're in the second segment and haven't even shared with the audience where they can purchase this book. It's a very powerful read.
It's available on Amazon, or you can go directly to the website, which is dearcongress.love, and there's a button that you can click to purchase the book there.
Okay. Now, each state, as I understand it, and you can correct me, is responsible for establishing its own definition of child abuse. And many of the victims, whatever state it is, fall between the cracks. Okay, do you find that to be the case when we talk about conversion therapy?
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, there is the blur that happens with conversion therapy is, unfortunately, right now it falls on, in most states under a parental preference to implement intervention for the well-being of their child. So that's kind of where the blur happens when it comes to, quote-unquote, it being considered child abuse or not. But what we have to do is understand that we need to eliminate that mindset that it is an intervention for some kind of deficit or deficiency or illness. We have to look at what actually happens in the conversion therapy process, that there is physical abuse, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, that neglect and abuse are part of this quote-unquote intervention. So it's not about, we need to eliminate the why and understand what is actually happening and focus on what is actually happening within the conversion therapy processes, because that's where the true harm is being done. It's not about why, it's about what.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How has your book been received? I mean, it's just hot off the press, really.
Yes, it's hot off the press. We keep getting, you know, the same reaction. This is very powerful. The feedback that I'm getting is, you know, that unfortunately, I find a lot of people saying, wow, some of those things happened to me a little bit. And I didn't, you know, I never really looked at it like, you know, I never really understood that, you know, I knew my parents didn't approve, but I didn't see it at the time what was actually happening. I get a lot, we get a lot of, it's very powerful. I hear a lot that, hearing the specific stories or the specific perspectives has a powerful impact. But more than anything else, I just hope that people understand, hear the voices and understand that when a child is going through conversion therapy, it's not about gay or straight to them a lot of the times. It's about love and acceptance and understanding and survival. And it's just about confusion as a child in dealing with rejection and physical violation and emotional violation. All of that is extremely confusing. And I think that's what you hear in the book. It's just the confusion of the individual about why this or what's going on and why it's going on. So I think that it's allowing people to see through their eyes and understand how it feels, you know.
Would you share some of the experiences that the children in the book had to live through? Because I want the audience to have a feel for exactly what we're talking about. We can say aversion therapy, you know, we can say institutionalization. That That's very general. I mean, if you would share one of the stories or two of the examples, I think that would be very helpful and beneficial for our listening audience to know exactly what we're talking about. You know, the mother that tells the child that maybe they need to kill themselves. Okay?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. So, one of the experiences, after being exposed to conversion therapy for years, the individual basically, says, I'm going to be gay, and the therapists say, we know you are, and you're going to choose not to love your family instead of, you're going to choose to hurt your family, and basically the attempt was to get the individual to kill themselves, and this is something that is very common. So what happens is the therapist basically do role play with the child, and they walk the child through their own suicide. They have the child pick where they will do it. They have the child decide where they will be and how they will do it and what they will do to end their own life. They will have the child visualize what happens when the bullet hits their head and which way their body will fall on the ground and where their parents will be when the gun goes off and how their parents will react and their own funeral. And the therapists actually, say and praise the child at their funeral for making the choice to end their own life rather than choosing to be gay and hurting God and hurting their family and hurting society. It's a very, very, very sad experience, honestly. And if you can imagine only being in seventh grade and going through that, and not just once, but 2, 3, 4, 5 times, being forced to play out your own suicide. The long-term repercussions of that are immeasurable.
Speak to some of the risk, the identified risk that one is subjected to, the impact that this has. And when we talk about risk, I think the younger, the child, it just, age plays a role.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the younger it starts, the more detrimental. I couldn't say the more detrimental, but obviously the impact is going to be very, very intense the younger it gets, the younger it starts. Interfering with the brain development at that age can have physical repercussions when it comes to hormonal development, emotional understanding, emotional development, which then all in turn affects your physical development and your physical reaction to life in general. Addiction is a very, very strong consequence of being exposed to conversion therapy, especially as a juvenile. Suicide, rates of homelessness among LGBTQ youth as a result of conversion therapy are profound, to say the least. Depression is a huge battle that is not short term. And just being able to lead a healthy, functional life in general, consistency, and the ability to form healthy emotional relationships, is a lifelong battle, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I'd say the three biggest ones that are the most alarming, without question, are addiction, suicide, and homelessness.
It it makes, well, the incidence, we know the incidence of using conversion therapy appears to be increasing. And that makes no sense to me. I mean, the American Psychological Association, American Medical Association, all of them, any type of critical medical, psychological organizations are saying this is awful. This is dangerous. We need to stop this. Yet it seems like the incidence of using conversion therapy is increasing, even among licensed mental health professionals. Why?
Well, I mean, this is the truly scary part about everything. You know, let's just understand that conversion therapy has been around forever. Its roots mark back all the way, you know, circa AD 1051. If we look at the Book of Gomorrah, which was written by a Benedictine monk, Saint Peter de Maine, this really, based off of my research, is the furthest back that I can find of the origination of the conversion therapy process. It is this monk, St. Peter, honestly was struggling with his own homosexuality.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other folks. This hour, I'm talking with Bella Jones about the practice of conversion therapy. We'll get right back with the discussion shortly.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks, which addresses issues relating to teens and families and development. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me on the phone is Bella Jones, who authored the book Dear Congress, Voices of American Children Being Abused by Conversion Therapy. Bella, I had to interrupt you. You were talking about the origination of conversion therapy, I think, in St. Peter the Monk. And if you want to continue, I would appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, St. Peter Damien wrote this book or this thesis. You know, the book was an attack on homosexual practices. It also included attacks on things like mutual masturbation, anal copulation, and solitary masturbation. And basically, he preached that it was a disruption against a moral order occasioned by lust in general. Mm-hmm. But the reality is what prompted him to write this book was his own uncomfortability with his personal homosexual desires or instincts. He goes through in detail, you know, what he did physically to redirect his own, you know, personal sexual instincts. He imposed self-harm on himself to try and intervene what he naturally was feeling. So, which is, I'm not sure if it's ironic or not, quite frankly, that the origination of this therapy or whatever it may be called, I don't even know if that's the right word, honestly, came from somebody who
was struggling,
who hated himself. I mean, it's just so sad, honestly. It really is just so sad. You know, sorry, I dropped the phone. I mean, I lost track of my thought process a little bit there. When I think about that, it's just so unbelievable. But that really is where it all started, in the Book of Gomorrah with that individual, and it evolved from there through the church and then influenced in our political arena as well. The fact that we're fighting today to change the laws, you know, it shows how long it's been rooted both in the political world and the religious world.
Do we have laws addressing this particular practice?
Well, I mean, it's state-specific at this point. So mm-hmm. what we need to do to enact change is contact our elected officials. And get each state to basically prohibit, convert licensed mental health professionals in your state from practicing conversion therapy techniques on juveniles. So at this point, it is state specific. And we just have to go one state at a time. I feel like a really great resource to educate yourself on where your state is at and specifically what the laws need to say in order to really prevent harm is nclrrights.org. Okay. That's the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Their website is extremely well done. It has each information necessary for each state. And there is also a link on there if you want to help be a part of the change and advocate for changing your state. But all the information that you need for your state is on there.
Minors appear to be a real vulnerable population. We've talked about that. They're often coerced to undergo, conversion therapy. And it's that being coerced that is traumatic in itself. They have no avenues. They have no support. I mean, if they're in that family, everybody, brothers, the siblings, the parents, grandparents, everyone seems to be against them. I can't think of any other word to describe it. They don't have support. They don't have an avenue. They don't have any shoulder that they can lean on.
Right. And that's the thing, if you hear a story of a child willingly participating in conversion therapy, please understand that does not mm-hmm. exist. That is in no way, shape, or form a reality. When you are posed with either being sent to foster care or being kicked out of your house or being told, I'll never love you, I'll hate you if you don't do this, by your parent, your grandparents, your family. There's no choice involved in that at all. There's a reason why, we don't let children have their own health care. You know what I mean? Because they're not fit to, choose a doctor at that point.
Right.
So what we need to do is enact laws that protect parents from choosing the wrong doctor. Mm-hmm. Because there is an institutionalized corruption within the therapy arena that is being used to manipulate the development and well-being of children. And I've been thinking a lot about it. Who's more at fault? Who's the bigger crime holder, the parents or the therapists? Parents are being led to believe that, homosexuality in their child is mm-hmm. an illness or a sickness. And then they're being led to believe that there's some kind of quote-unquote cure. Not that it's not the parents' fault, but at the same time, we have to hold, the practitioners accountable for mm-hmm. falsifying falsifying information. There is no proven facts whatsoever. There's been extensive research that has been done. There is no kind of quote-unquote intervention that will change somebody's sexual orientation or gender identity. And it's basically false advertising, to put it in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. It is misleading the public to purchase a product that is not a real product, quite frankly.
Right. And I'm really glad that you emphasize that there is nothing that can be done to change a gay man or a lesbian sexual orientation. You
Correct.
Cannot do it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It does not exist. And even when you look at APA, I mean, homosexuality has evolved from being classified as a psychological disorder to now APA repudiates that. They admit, no, this is not the case, okay? It is not a disorder, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of awestruck in that I can't believe that people are still using these techniques. I mean, electric shock and using, you know, drugs to induce vomiting. And when I read the book, I'm at a loss for words, as you probably can tell. It was awful. It was just awful to believe that young children are experiencing this.
And what's really concerning, too, is at such a young age, one of the techniques that's used is to expose children to heterosexual behavior or visual exposure to heterosexual behavior in an effort to change their sexual desires. Mm-hmm. It's what's called sexual desires training. Mm-hmm. These children are being exposed to sexual acts and pornography, quite frankly, at an extremely young age. What is voluntary about that? What is not child abuse about that? It's disturbing on multiple levels. When you think about the words sexual desired training, and you're talking about a fifth grader, I mean, it's really sick, quite frankly. That's the sick part of it.
Yes, it is. It is. I know in the state of Florida, there are no laws that prohibit the discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. I mean, I know there are schools that accept disabled students using vouchers, and they say they must comply with a federal code banning discrimination. But this discrimination is based on race, it's based on color, it's based on national origin, but not sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. That really is a problem. And this may be more of a rhetorical question, but religion seems to play such a prevalent role in conversion therapy. Can one be gay and Christian?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
In reading your book, and it makes you go, well, how can one be gay or, homosexual and Christian? Because it seems like Christians, they may love the sinner and hate the sin approach. Is that what is embraced? I came out of that book. When I finished that book, I had a number of questions. And so I'm just kind of, verbalizing them. But I just wonder, how can you be gay and Christian?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, I know.
I think that, when it comes to institutionalized religion, just like all things in life, there are good versions and bad mm-hmm. versions of it. And I suppose on how it is interpreted. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think we need to remember that, you know, conversion therapy is not just about the Christian religion or the Catholic right. religion or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. It's about society's uncomfortability with multiple definitions of quote-unquote normalcy. You know, and it's not just about, you know, the religious drive behind it, but it's also about, you know, there's a political drive behind it as well. You know, there is
yeah.
a safety in a man and a woman in a white picket fence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the end of the day, we have to remember this is not about, you know, we can't be overly focused on religion and politics. We have to remember this is about the human rights issue. Okay. It's a child's rights issue. It is about safety and well-being and health and wellness. And it's about protecting our basic fundamental rights to those things as an individual. I have the right to not have my physical development be interfered with, regardless of what age I am. I have the right to have the chance to have a healthy mental and emotional development. And if I know that there is something that could deter that and lead me down a path of suicide or addiction or homelessness, I have the right not to be exposed to that, mm-hmm. regardless of what age I am. And we're taking away that right from children, you know, by legally not having something in place that says this is not physically, emotionally, or mentally healthy. Mm-hmm. It is damaging for the physical, biological, and emotional development of a child. And that's what we need to stay focused on. And for the people that are Catholic and Christian and Protestant and Jewish and who may have concerns about violating their religious sacraments or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. please understand that that is not what this is about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to understand, you know, it's about the well-being of an individual and the health of an individual. You know, isn't that part of being a religious person as well?
Right. Indeed.
You know?
Indeed.
Yeah.
And society, though, society plays such a prominent role. I mean, for example, the whole idea is often perpetuated and you hear the question of homosexuality. Is it due to genes or is it due to the environment? What does that say? What message does that send? I mean, when you hear that kind of thing, or you hear homophobia, and it's used to describe, you know, prejudicial attitudes and hostile reactions to lesbians and gay men. I mean, for me, it defines a sort of unidimensional construct of attitudes. These attitudes are based on irrational fears.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, hate is a learned behavior and mm-hmm. ignorance is a learned behavior. And, you know, don't, regardless of what you've been taught, don't let ignorance be the blood on your hands. Mm-hmm. You know, because the child down the street that takes their own life because they've been exposed to conversion therapy is blood on your hands if you didn't advocate to protect them.
Well, you know? Before we close, tell us one more time where one can get the book, where they can purchase the book.
It's available on dearcongress.love and also available on Amazon.
Bella, I want to extend my sincere thanks and appreciation for you sharing your time and your experiences. So thank you and the Children's Committee for authoring the book, Dear Congress, Voices of American Children, Currently Being Abused by Conversion Therapy. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. The 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.